It is a Friday night. We're recording this before you people get it on Monday morning.
Yes, sir. And,
all I know is, thank God it's Friday. I've had a heck of a week, and I'm ready to do the show, man. We were texting earlier. I was like, maybe we'll do it Saturday. But then I got home and got a little rest, and I was like, no, let's get it done. Let's do it. Oh, excuse me. I'm burping on the episode. That's funny. We were just talking about the pre-show about there's an episode back in the archives sometimes where there's a fart on the episode, but it's hard to tell. And there I am just unleashing a burp on the first 35 seconds of the show.
There you go. It's the sequel.
And man, that was kind of a bit of an acidic-y one. Ooh. Old age shutting in.
Yeah, man. It just don't go down the same way.
And welcome to the Rebel Radio Podcast. And we're glad to have you with us as always. Gonna talk a pretty fucking cool movie today. And talk about the Oscars this weekend, which this movie is nominated for a whole bunch of them, and a bunch of other cool stuff as we always try to do. And on the Rebel Radio Podcast.com, which is where you can find all of our episodes and find us on iHeartRadio, Spotify, Apple Podcast, Amazon Music. We're actually on there now. We've been on there, but I was able to correct the links on the website having some trouble finding how to find the correct link. And I finally figured it out because let's just put it this way. Amazon, we all use it. You know, it's one of the greatest modern inventions, but their Amazon Music and the care they take for podcasts is not exactly user friendly. But I was able to finally find our correct link that links right to our show. So plenty of ways to listen to the Rebel Radio Podcast. Matt, how are you, man?
Man, I'm good. I'm the exact opposite. I've been on vacation this week. Oh, got a lot of stuff done. Yeah, I'm well rested, and I still have a. Still have 5 more days to go, and then
I go
back.
How many days did you get off?
12.
Man, he must have had some extra soft knee pads.
Oh man, no, I lucked out. Just the way my schedule is, and the way this vacation landed, it's like I got an extra few days. On top of it.
I bet you landed all right getting those vacation times. Hey, whatever you got to do, man.
Yeah, oh, man.
You don't judge.
Whatever you got to do to get the time off. But yeah, man, I feel like I missed watching one thing, which we'll get there, but I feel like I've seen some cool, watched some cool stuff this week and got caught up in some stuff, played a lot of Battlefront. So I got my Star Wars fix in, and there's always those characters that you pass, you don't play with, and I was like, you know what, I'm going to challenge myself to play with like
Bossk. That's
'cause
they suck.
Yeah. I found out how to get good with Bossk. You basically just have to keep your distance and set your bombs and then lure the Jedi to come to you. And then they run into all those bombs, and then they're down to low health. You can just quick, get them down. Because in that game, if you've got a blaster, unless you're, I'd say Leia, Han, or Iden Verzio, then you're going down real fast once a Jedi gets close to you.
But then there's some characters they change, like Battlefront 1, Boba Fett was badass. He used fired the flamethrower and all that. Then in part two, he's like, he sucks.
Yeah. Like, he's not as good. You gotta
kill easy.
He's got a couple good feats. He's got the disorienting missile, which will cloud your vision and stuff and take away your special. If you've got a special equipped, like Leia, if she has her heavy repeating blaster equipped, it'll yank that away. And her little blaster pistol will be in overheat mode for a small time. And then you've got the triple missile. You can still
telling me you didn't watch episode 2 of Mandalorian.
I forgot about it. I forgot about it, man. I'm not used to it being on TV. And I watched one Pedro Pascal, episode. I think I've seen Pedro Pascal this week. I forget he's on twice.
He's everywhere.
He's everywhere.
Ruling the streaming wars.
That's right.
I mean, he's just basically fucking owning it for Disney and HBO Max. He's like, hey, you know, put me in your show. CBS yeah. is probably over there with Paramount Plus just like, what can we put Pedro in?
What then, more can we do?
And then who else has a streaming service? Showtime. Well, that does all.
Oh, yeah. Showtime. Yeah.
Peacock. They're probably, what can we put Pedro in?
We'll make him a circus mouse.
Even Crunchyroll's like, what anime can we put him in?
I know, right? He's going to be the live action Goku. Yeah,
it's Pedro Pascal. Oh, man. The coolest thing about him, too, is, man, he, like, I really legitimately, when I see him in interviews, he's so humbled by everything, his success. And I really believe it with him, man. Like, I don't feel, sometimes you watch an actor give an interview and you're like, man, you know, they're just going through the motions. You know, it's bullshit, you know.
Yeah.
But, like, I really, with him, like, I buy into it. I think he really is humbled by it all, and he just takes it day by day, and he's yeah. he's enjoying it, man. He really is.
Yeah, he's genuine, man. Yeah. He's one of those. There, you got a couple of those genuine actors. You know, Adam Sandler, mm-hmm. you know, walks around in friggin' jean shorts and whatever T-shirt he feels like. And he's open, honest, transparent with you.
Yeah.
And Pascal's kind of one of those guys.
Kevin Smith, as we've talked about on the show, Kevin very Smith. Transparent.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You know, I mean, it's just how Pedro feels, man. And, well, since you did watch The Last of Us, at least, I guess we can get into the penultimate episode before the finale this weekend. And it's kind of weird. I always forget to mention that we always put in our notes for the show that we discuss this week's episode of The Last of Us. And I'm sure sometimes a listener goes, well, that was last week's when they listened to it on Monday morning. So forgive us for that.
Yeah. Yes,
we usually do when we say last week's the week before. So when this episode comes out, we will have already seen the finale of season one. Which we'll discuss next week on the show. That's just how it works.
That's just how it rolls, and, baby.
No other explanation for that. But I thought that there was at least one person out there who goes, those motherfuckers are lying to us. They're talking about last week's episode. And it's not on purpose. But in this week's episode, man, Joel continues to heal from his wound. And Ellie ventures out on her own to go looking for food and medicine or whatever help she can get for Joel. And she runs into a man named David who, as we meet in the episode through the eyes of his village that he's running, that he's a preacher / leader of this group. And but he's not quite the nice guy he perceives. He's not
the holy man that you would think he would be.
And so he comes across Ellie, and she basically puts a gun on him and his sidekick, who is played by the original Joel from the video game and made up for the show. That character is not in the game. And holds him aside. Look, I need medicine, you know, and give me medicine. I won't kill y'all. And so he comes back with medicine and he gives it to Ellie, and she, returns to Joel, but this group decides they got to find him because we find out this group is connected to the reason Joel's injured. One of the guy that Joel kills is the one that Joel injured, and this group is upset about it. So they want to find Joel and take him out, you know, but they want to bring the girl in alive, you know. And so through a series of searching for Ellie, and she, my biggest thing, I did like the episode. I mean, I've liked every episode of the show, but Ellie, I just in the game for some reason don't remember her being this careless. She's opening the garage really loudly. She just decides to go out instead of maybe just staying in the house where she could hold herself in. And just some of the things she does in the game, in the show, I'm just like, be smarter, Ellie. You know, it's like you're making a lot of noise. You're doing this and that. But it is kind of how it happens in the game. She does get captured by David, and we find out they allude to it already in the episode. Like, there's a huge illusion when everyone's eating supper after being told they didn't have any food. And then they walk in with the deer that they took from Ellie. She basically trades them the deer she killed for the medicine. And they're all like, oh, okay, you're already eating. And there's this awkwardness in the room as to what's going on.
Yeah.
And
the one of the cooks is like, what meat is this? And the guy's like, venison.
Yeah,
it's venison. And then, you know, they knew they were low on supplies, and they bring in a frozen deer from right. the tundra, you know?
And no one really questions it. But we find out that earlier in the episode, a young girl had asked when they were going to bury her father. And in quite disturbing context, we find out that they were probably eating her father.
Yeah.
As we could find out that the group that's led by David is unintentionally cannibals because he's feeding his people human meat. And Ellie finds this out pretty quickly. And, when she's captured and she is horrified by it. And David is not so nice to her. In fact, as Ellie tries to escape, a pretty intense scene where she breaks his finger and David tries to, do some terrible things to her. But in a few minutes, she gets her revenge. But while all that's going on, David's group's also looking for Joel, and they find him. But Joel gets the upper hand on them as the penicillin worked, and he's feeling a little better. And there's a great scene in there that's right from the game where Joel is interrogating the guy shoot him or stab him in the knee? And
stabs him in the knee.
And then the other guy was like, what does he tell him? He goes, oh, it's okay. Yeah. I believe him. And Joel just whaps him in the head. That's right from the game. I was like, yes. Had a really great Joel moment there. Yeah. Well, I believe him. and as Joel continues to search for Ellie, she, gets a violent confrontation with David as the building around her sets on fire. And Ellie gets the upper hand with a machete and she slaughters David. Absolutely. After his attempts to hurt her. And in some ways it's alluded that maybe he was trying to rape her, you know?
Yeah. And that's what I got from it.
Yeah. And, so he's a sick, sick individual, and Ellie unleashes holy hell on him. And, as she escapes, she's reunited with Joel and, very tender moment where Joel tells her, I got you, baby girl. And Last of Us does what it's been doing for 8 episodes, wants to bring you to tears after so many horrifying things.
Yeah, because he called his daughter baby girl. Yeah. This is the first time he's called her baby girl.
Yep. And
in the game, Mark, does Joel kill David?
No, that's right from the game. Ellie kills him in the game too.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because I was, you know, I haven't seen it, and you know, I kept watching so I could see the director's commentary. And the director's like, he's like, everyone's waiting to see whenever Joel's going to pop in and save the day. And we were not going to have any of that. He's like, we were going to make sure that Ellie, you know, basically controlled her own destiny from there right. on out.
Yeah,
no, I wonder if that's something they change or if it was from the game. So
no, Ellie definitely takes him out of the game. Trying to remember if something Joel does something else in the game, like right maybe before they're reunited.
Mm-hmm.
But no, she definitely takes him out in the game.
Nice.
Yeah, that scene was almost pulled right from the video game where she unleashes on him, and deservedly so. But just another well written, well acted. I mean, Bella Ramsey, she's great, man. I wasn't so sure about her first as Ellie, but man, she's a absolutely wonderful in the show, and she was really good in this episode, showing the emotion of it and the emotional range it took to play Ellie in that episode. And Pedro, of course, continues to be good. And not just those guys, that the surrounding supporting cast in the show has been good throughout every episode, and it's completely game changing the way we look at video game adaptions. I really think The Last of Us is truly more important than people think it is. I mean, it changed the way we looked at video games, and now it's changed the way we look at video game adaptions. And we have one episode left, and it sucks that it's got to be over, but we are getting a season 2, and looking forward to seeing how it ends, man, this first season, because it's been really well done. And I know people have complained like there's not enough infected action. I even complained a little bit, but I also realize that the more I think about the infected fights in the game were simply to give you a game mechanism to further the action in the game. But when I really sit back and think about the game is about the journey of Joel and Ellie and dealing with this new world they live in. And, yeah. And the show does a wonderful job of showing that.
No. Yeah. And that's something that I think people forget. And that's overlooked is a human element. I think The Last of Us does a really good job of bringing that in and making a connection to the viewer. and keeping them engaged with that aspect of the story throughout its entirety. It doesn't rely on that action like some of these shows and movies of the past might. You know, I think Walking Dead did a good job of it. Last of Us is doing a good job of it. I feel like, Resident Evil has tried and failed and failed and failed. And, maybe after watching this in like 10 years, we'll get something. But it's just, wow. You know, we've had two franchises that have been able to make that connection and have the best of both worlds. And, I can't wait to see more Last of Us and see what comes of this, this new blueprint.
Well, I think it just goes to show that, video games are 8 to 12 to 15 to 20 hours of play. And it's hard to condense that sometimes into a 2-hour film. And, I think that, like Metal Gear Solid, I think would be awesome for an adaption, but I don't think you can do Metal Gear Solid in 2 hours. I would love if Hideo Kojima ever decides to license out Metal Gear, I would love to see him go to HBO or someone and say, this is how it needs to be done. Let's do 10 episodes and tell the story of Metal Gear Solid through episodic storytelling instead of trying to rush it into a film. And there's a lot of games like that, that just would work better as longer stories and not rush into a film. And hopefully The Last of Us changed that. Amazon's trying to jump on board with their God of War and Tomb Raider adaptions. So I really do think this is going to change things and open up things more. We'll see how the season one ends. Hopefully it ends on a high note, as the whole show has been excellent. It's hard to argue anything this thing has done right. I know the show took some criticism for some storytelling decisions they made as far as, openly telling a gay love story and things like that. And that's a small minority that criticized it because, it was a nice, well-told story. Maybe it wasn't expected because it was from the game, but, it was trying to show something important in this horrifying world that they live in now. And, you look back on that episode and you're like, it makes sense now. At the time, you're like, okay, why was that told? Because it was important to drive the story forward in some ways, as far as Joel and Ellie and the fact that they knew Bill and I can't think of the guy, his other name, so it all makes sense as far as the journey in The Last of Us. And we'll see how it ends.
Yeah. So. Yeah, man. Just a few more days and we'll be there.
Yep. Oof. And since you were slacking, I'll just give a quick spoiler review of Mandalorian episode 2, and we'll talk about it more next week when we talk about episode 3 and 2 at the same time. But let's just say swimming might be a good way of no context describe some things that happened in Mandalorian season 2, and Katie Sackhoff as Bo-Katan. Ass kicking. There we go. A couple of non spoiler review with it's swell. It's
swell.
That's really all I watched this week was The Last of Us and Mandalorian. I've been so busy I haven't had time to watch any movies. I did pick up a couple old things on Vudu with their $5 sales. Same. Probably got around to getting a digital, even though I own Terminator 2 on Blu-ray. I was like, I'm gonna buy it digitally and The Rock, since I don't have The Rock on Blu-ray.
Nice.
Love seeing Sean Connery get his hair cut. No, I don't, but I like The Rock. I think The Rock's one of my favorite action movies of the 90s. It's fucking awesome. Man.
Yeah, Sean Connery.
It's so ridiculous and over the top. That's Nicolas what makes Cage. It so badass. Have you ever heard of the Rocket Man? I'm going to tell you about the Rocket Man. It's so great.
What was funny is I bought a Cage movie on that $5 deal a few weeks ago. It was but it was Willy's Wonderland. He says nothing in the entire movie, and has this very awkward like pinball machine scene. I enjoyed it for what it was. It's a, you know, a throwaway B movie, horror movie kind of thing. Five Nights at Freddy's type deal.
It's funny,
but, you know, I think it's entertaining at least.
It's funny that Cage was mentioned right after talking a couple of Pedro Pascal shows, since they made a wonderful buddy comedy in 2022. You know,
yeah,
incredible weight of massive talent. Is that the name of it? Something like that.
But incredible weight of massive talent. Yeah,
I really enjoyed that. That was one movie last year that I really enjoyed way more than I thought I would.
You know? That was a good one.
Yeah, it was fun.
Cage playing himself.
Yeah.
And then I saw the trailer for Renfield. I'm actually,
yeah.
I don't know. I want to see him as Dracula.
Yeah, but I don't have to go to the theater to see it. I can wait and see.
Oh yeah, that's something I want to. I'd wait and see too. Yeah. I did go see Scream 6, and it's doing very well in theaters. Looks like
it's because there's nothing else out.
Well, you had Adam Driver's movie out. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you still have Creed 3 that's in theaters. Usually, you know, it's stunted by a really good, you know, box office movie, you know, because they can still do well in their second week. But it looks like they're going to, you know, be around $42 million for the weekend, which is more than they did last year and would be another franchise record. I feel like, you know, this movie has kind of gone back to what made it successful in its first film, the whole satire thing, you know, the slasher cliches, but like, you know, bringing up how it's a requel or a loyalty sequel and the new rules of that new age slasher with the loyalty sequel. And it's not dumb about, you know, that information. It's very smart on how it's satirical with itself. And that's, I felt like it was something that kind of lost its way with Scream 3 and 4, even though Wes was, you know, directing those films, ripped to the great Wes Craven. But Radio Silence has done a great job of producing and hiring directors for these last two films. I think it's a good watch if you're a fan of the slasher genre and you like the Scream movies. I think it's possibly the second best Scream movie that has come out. The first one's obviously the best. There's a tie between 5 and 6, for sure. You could put 6 first, put 5 first, after the first installment. And then, of course, it's like 2, 4, and 3 after that. It's got to be. I feel like they take a lot of aspects from 2, which is funny because it's like, you know, this is the requel. So it's the sequel to the loyalty sequel. So, and then, you know, 2 was
legacy sequel. This is the grocery store where your loyalty card, bitch.
My loyalty card. If you have your rewards card, it's the reward sequel. But yeah, I mean, you get what I mean. Sure. They leave it open. They leave it open for a 7th.
Well, of course they do. It's a fucking horror franchise.
And I think the 7th film's going to happen. And it's been happening. They left 5 open for 6.
25 Fast X movies. Why not 25 Ghostface movies?
I mean, you know. Oh, yeah. And I think these last two movies that have come out have been better than the Halloween movies that we got of new. Especially with how Halloween Ends ended. I think it was underwhelming how Halloween Ends ended. I think it's definitely better than the remakes of all the Texas Chainsaw Massacre movies. They just haven't been able to duplicate with the first one. And well, I'll say 2003 wasn't bad. The one with Jessica Biel wasn't bad. But you know, as of late, Scream's killing it over these other franchises.
Whatever happened to Jessica Biel?
That's a good question. I know her and Justin Timberlake had a baby. Maybe
she's raising
taking
kids,
care of the kids. Yeah,
sweet ass on movies.
Yep, that sounds about right. Maybe she'll return. Maybe she'll return one day to do another Total Recall installment.
No, she was in that.
Yeah, she was in Total Recall.
The Call of Duty one?
Yeah. Yeah, she was the girl. She was the girl of his dreams.
Oh.
And all and I then remember Underworld.
Did that on our Patreon. All I remember is Kate Beckinsale posing a lot.
Yeah, yeah. She's the Sharon Stone
type.
Kate,
stand here and look hot. Okay, honey. Since her husband directed it. Okay, yeah. Kate, I need you to look here and stand here and look hot again. Okay, honey. I mean, that's like the whole movie.
Yeah. Make sure your makeup's on. And have your hair blowing in the wind and wear tight leather pants.
And Colin Farrell's over in there that movie going, what am I doing in this movie? I'm a better actor than this.
Yeah.
You know, which he really is. You know?
He is.
And yeah. All right. Let's do some news. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
We must acknowledge Chuck Norris turns 83 today.
Oh my God.
You know?
Wow.
We once saw Chuck Norris at Comp Palooza. Listen in the room and tell some really cool stories, and we walked away and survived. So you can't survive me in the presence of the great Chuck Norris people.
That's right.
You know, I have Don't to say, afraid. Man, you know, we've been to a lot of Comp Paloozas, you know, going on 10, 11 years of Comp Paloozas. And that was one of my absolute favorite panels, moments we ever had, just being in that room with him and listening to him and, you know, we're about 20 feet from him, and it was just awesome. I mean, really, truly one of my favorite. And I'm not even as hardcore into the martial arts genre as you are, you know, but I do appreciate, you know, I like it. You know, I bought that Bruce Lee bundle last month. I do enjoy those kind of films, and Chuck being a fellow Texan, man, just makes it more special. And that was awesome. So, so we have to acknowledge the great Chuck Norris turns 83 today. And,
happy birthday, Chuck.
To many more, Chuck. Man, we the planet is not ready for you to go anytime soon.
Heck no.
John Bernthal is coming back as the Punisher and Daredevil Born Again. This is great news. You and me and our other co-host, who's on indefinite hiatus along, we're having a little fun debate about who the
great that was fun.
Punisher was. I think it's, I know you like Thomas Jane in the role, but it's hard to argue that anyone's better than Bernthal. He absolutely came to that Netflix show and just owned the fucking character. Hook, line, and sinker.
He came hard, man. And, he came to play, man. Yeah. He wasn't dicking around.
And he was great. He's great, man. And I'm pretty excited that he's going to be back. I didn't love the Punisher show as a whole. That was okay. But I like him in the role a lot, you know? I do appreciate how the show dealt with the PTSD and things like that that the Punisher dealt with. I thought some of that was really cool, but it's cool that Bernthal is going to come back in the Daredevil show because it gives some continuity to these characters that were, you know, you remember when these Netflix shows came out, they were supposed to be part of the MCU, and then they never really acknowledged them in the movies, even though the TV shows acknowledged some of the movie events quite often. So it's kind of good that we're getting some continuity and you know, hopefully possibly we'll get Christian Ritter back eventually as Jessica Jones and see where
that's heavily rumored,
but at least we're getting Charlie Cox and John Bernthal back. So it's a start. So pretty excited for that. To see,
have you seen that YouTube short Dirty Laundry?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
With Tom. Okay. I feel like that, like that kind of Punisher that Thomas Jane played in that YouTube short would have definitely been a closer match.
Directed by Ali Shakur. I think he's a, he also did the Mighty Morphin's Power Rangers short. That was very adult with Katie Sackhoff. He's done a few of those. He also produced the Castlevania Netflix series.
That was cool.
He's very active on social media too. He'll actually, you say stuff to him on social media, he'll respond pretty often. He's very active with his fans. So yeah,
that's cool.
He seems like a cool guy. You know, we had the rumor of, or not the rumor, but they had announced the Batman Cape Crusader animated series, which was going to be not a direct sequel to Batman the animated series, but kind of in the same vein. You know, I think Paul Dini's involved and JJ Abrams is involved and, you know, at one point they were talking about Kevin Conroy doing the voice, but of course we know that cannot happen now. But it had gotten scrapped at DC Studios. And, but thankfully Amazon has picked it up because Amazon signed a deal earlier this year to help to do some DC productions along with HBO Max and DC Studios. Mm-hmm. So Amazon has picked up a full season order for Batman Caped Crusader. So we're still going to get the new Batman animated series, which is cool because we need more Batman in our lives. I mean, I mean, that's just how I feel. I feel about Batman like I feel about Star Wars. Just give it all to me. You know, I never get tired of Batman. I never get tired of Star Wars. So,
you know, what I didn't know, and I was just kind of looking up Kevin Conroy and Batman and stuff like that because I never bought Robert Pattinson's Batman movie, but it was on sale this week for like $7 or so. Yeah. So I bought it digitally. Cause I'm like, not a bad movie to own. It's a good movie.
It's not a bad movie to own. It's fucking great.
Yeah. You're like, it's fucking great. And I came across, I guess Conroy, they asked Conroy, who he thought was the best portrayal of Batman, best Batman actor. And, he said, Ben Affleck was the best portrayal of Batman that he had seen.
There's a lot of old school Batman fans that really like what Affleck did in the role.
Yeah. And I think coming from Conroy, it carries a lot of weight because if you ask most people, he's the best representative person of Batman across all channels.
Yeah. I mean, I like what Affleck did in the role. I never had any problem with it. Honestly, I wanted Affleck to get his own solo movie fighting Deathstroke. That sounded cool as shit. You know, but it never happened. I never really had an issue with Affleck. Honestly, most of the Zack Snyderverse casting didn't really bother me, any of it, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't really like Ezra Miller too much until I saw the Snyder Cut, where he's given more to do and he's not as annoying. That Whedon cut, he's not very good. And you're like, wow, who's this dude playing Flash?
Yeah.
When you see the Snyder Cut, you appreciate him a lot more.
Definitely.
You know, and so really that was never an issue with me as far as casting. Affleck was fine. He did a good job. And we're going to get one more look at him here in the Flash as Batman.
In the blue and gray.
Yeah, looks cool as shit. Let's stay with DC a little bit before we go into some Star Wars news. James Gunn kind of hinted at that he revealed his Chapter 1 plans. Gods and Monsters last month, but he kind of hinted at that. That's not all. That there are some other things are in the works that might get announced. And he said it could be a couple more movies and a couple more TV shows. So, and I did feel that when I heard the Phase 1 plans, we even talked about that. It seemed kind of short. So maybe there is more to it than just the four or five movies they announced.
Yeah.
So it did seem a little short. So Gunn kind of revealed that. So we'll see. And he also made it sound like more announcements are forthcoming fairly soon, in the next few months. So we'll see where they go with that, which, I still don't expect, even though he says the next few months, I still don't expect much until either San Diego or DC Fandom. Cause I think they are going to bring back DC Fandom this year. So we'll see what happens. Okay. We'll save the Star Wars news for a minute, but, we finally got our first look at Seth Rogen's animated Ninja Turtles movie called Mutant Mayhem. It's pretty much what I expected. It uses kind of a new kind of style of animation. Looks real similar to Into the Spider-Verse. Lots of jokes and funny stuff. It looks like a Ninja Turtle movie. I don't know what more to say to it. It feels like Rogen and his team have been hyping this movie up for a few years now. And now we finally got our first look at it. I'm like, okay, cool. Ninja Turtles. And I love the Ninja Turtles and stuff, but like, I guess I was hoping for a little more excitement from the trailer, you know?
Okay. Just seems kind of pedestrian.
Yeah. So we'll see. We'll see how well it does. But we did get a little bit of Star Wars news this week as Bob Iger, the president at Disney, was doing some talking about the future of Star Wars and some things leaked out as Star Wars Celebration in Europe is happening here in a few weeks. And it appears, and it's pretty much somewhat confirmed by Iger, that Kevin Feige's Star Wars movie is not going to happen now. And it seems like Patty Jenkins' Rogue Squadron movie, which was As of a couple months ago, she said she was still working on it whenever the news came out that she was not going to be working for DC Studios anymore. But now it seems like her movie is being canned as well. But it appears that the Damon Lindelof Star Wars movie has not been canned yet. Neither has the Taika Waititi movie. But I think we'll get more news at Star Wars Celebration here in a few weeks in Europe. All I can say about that is after watching Thor, Love and Thunder, I really don't want Taika Waititi to make a Star Wars movie. Just how I feel. I just think that his style doesn't fit Star Wars. Yeah. That's just me. And I know he did an episode of The Mandalorian and he did the voice of IG-11. And I, as a person, I think Taika is cool as shit, man. You listen to him in interviews and he just seems like kind of guy you can have a beer with and hang out. But I just don't think his style fits Star Wars. So I'm kind of hoping his Star Wars movie gets canned too.
Yeah.
That's just my personal opinion. But we'll
because
find
he does, you know, the stuff that he says whenever he goes out and tries to, you know, give the film his own direction, he's openly admitted, yeah, I've just tried to piss off as many fans as possible.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you can't do that. Star Wars is a freaking religion. Right. And I say that because like 10 years ago, so many people vote, you know, in the UK census, put down that Jedi was their religion, right, and got it an official religion in the UK. So it's, yeah, Star Wars, I mean, is like a religion. You can't go in there and mess with a religion, yeah, man. You, I mean, don't.
Taika Waititi's a super talented individual. He really is.
Yeah. I mean,
he can direct a movie. He can act. But sometimes I think that he just needs to stay away from things that he doesn't know enough about. And,
yeah,
you know, like Ragnarok was fine, but Love and Thunder was not. And I think the biggest problem with Love and Thunder is that Marvel Studios and Kevin Feige maybe took some reins off of him and let him kind of do more what he wanted. And it didn't turn out so well.
Yeah.
But, I do respect Waititi and think he is talented, but I just don't want to see him do a Star Wars movie. Just my personal feeling. He can do another episode of The Mandalorian. That's fine. You know, but yeah, see, he has Jon Favreau and Dave Filoni watching over him on that, so he's not gonna be able to do whatever he wants. You know, so
yeah, and he needs that that check to make sure he's on that straight and narrow. And
I mean, if he wants to go make more Jojo Rabbits in his own movies and stuff where he doesn't have to be checked, that's fine. But when it comes to genre stuff, you know, he needs to kind of be kept in check. I still need to watch Jojo Rabbit because I heard good things about it. And I do legitimately like his Hunt for the Wilder People movie. That was a good movie. Did you ever see that one?
Jojo Rabbit?
No, The Hunt for the Wilder People.
No.
Yeah, that's good. That's one Taika Waititi movie I really did enjoy. I think you would like that. It might be streaming somewhere, but you should check that one out. That was good. All right. Well, let's get into today's feature film, man. A movie that just came out last year. About a year ago, last February, it started hitting theaters and stuff. And kind of took the world by storm in some ways. I mean, didn't make tons of money, but it made money. And then it started getting award season buzz, and it's built and it's built and it's built to the point where it's gotten 11 Oscar nominations. It's winning numerous awards throughout other different award ceremonies for best actor and best supporting actor and best picture and screenplay and all sorts of stuff. And that is Everything Everywhere All at Once. Man, this movie, you know, it came out last year and I decided to go see it one night when I didn't have the kids. And I was like, you know, I'm going to go see this thing because I'm hearing so many good things about it. And I walked out of the theater and, you know, every now and then, you know, we see a lot of movies that are big special effects movies and comic book films and things that we know what to expect from, you know, to a certain degree, right? You know, you know what you're going to get when you go see a Batman film or a Spider-Man film or even Top Gun or Mission Impossible, those big tentpole films, you kind of know what you're going to get. And there's nothing wrong with that because that's why we go to the movies, to be entertained. But in today's world, we get so many remakes, redos, reboots. It sometimes feels like Hollywood isn't giving us anything fresh and new. There are directors out there like Christopher Nolan doing things like Tenet and Interstellar, giving us some new stuff. Mm-hmm. I would even say Taika Waititi, as much as maybe I complain about him, he does give us some new stuff and fresh ideas. And movies like this come along that renew your faith in cinema. Like, wow, Hollywood's not out of ideas yet. And that's absolutely what Everything Everywhere All at Once is. It's one of those movies that when you first see it and you're done with it, you're like, wow, it's like a breath of fresh air to the cinema scope of the world. And, yeah. And that's really how I felt the first time I watched this movie. And I know I reviewed it a bit on the show last year after I saw it, but we're going to go full into this movie today and dig a little bit into the movie that was made by the Daniels, starring Michelle Yeoh and Kay Kwan Quinn. Did I say it right? Short Round from Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, making this wonderful comeback, which has been such a pleasure to watch on the internet.
20-year hiatus coming back from.
Just enjoying. Well, he's been in a few things, but yeah, he hadn't really done much since Encino Man, I think was the last movie he was in.
Yeah, Encino Man with Frasier.
Yeah, so it's been a pleasure watching him in his career resurrection. I mean, if you don't smile at the things this guy's doing and just having a good time, then something's wrong with you. You know?
Yeah, for real.
And a movie we've talked about a few times over the last year in the podcast. And I know Long Saw and Matt, you eventually got around to seeing it last year. And I think a movie that we all appreciate very much for what it tries to do. And basically, to summarize this film, man, it's a difficult movie to summarize in some ways, but also not, because it's definitely a movie you kind of have to witness it for yourself to really fully grasp what it's about.
There isn't just one message, although you can sum it up with the message of family.
Yeah.
You know, and empathy. I think empathy is probably the biggest theme in this movie.
It's essentially a mixture of a multiverse science fiction story with a little bit of a twist on the tale of A Christmas Carol in some ways. Evelyn Wong is a laundromat owner with her and her husband, and they're being audited, for not taking care of their taxes. And if it starts off and they have a daughter who is a lesbian, and her mother is Evelyn. The daughter's name is Joy. Evelyn's having a hard time processing this. She accepts it, but she doesn't fully accept it because of her culture. And she doesn't want her father to know that her daughter is gay. And so her relationship with her daughter is strained. You get that within the first 5 minutes of the movie, that they don't have the best relationship they could. You also realize that her and her husband's relationship is strained because he wants a divorce because he feels like they're not communicating anymore. And then they go to visit the tax auditor, played wonderfully by Jamie Lee Curtis. And that's when the movie just takes this twist where her husband, Wayman, turns out that he's woken up and he's like a time jumper or a dimension jumper. And he wakes up and he tells her to follow these certain directions. And
in Days of Future Past, people, whenever Logan wakes up in another body.
Right.
But this is across a different universe of yourself, not in the past.
And he tells her to follow these simple directions to do, because if she wants to live, she's got to do this. And throughout a series of events and exposition, we find out that he is basically here to show her why she needs to, one, save a relationship, one, save her family, one, save the world, essentially, because her daughter in a different universe is this evil character who wants to destroy everything.
Tobu.
In all the universes, essentially, because it all plays back to her strained relationship with her mother. So she wants to take out the whole universe. And they jump through dimensions by the most bizarre things, by like licking a wall, chewing bubble gum, putting a butt plug up their butt, basically. And it's these are what they call their,
it's an improbability algorithm.
Yes.
I don't know if that's what it's called, but that's basically what it is.
And it sounds really bizarre, and it is, but one great thing this movie does is it never gets so bizarre that it doesn't pull itself back in. And I think that's what it does really well. Yeah. And you get about 30 minutes into this film and you just sit back, you start going with it. You don't even question what it is anymore because it's so damn entertaining. Mm-hmm. That you're kind of at that point, you're along for the ride. And what a ride it is for two hours and 20 minutes. As Evelyn's story continues to unfold and we see different times in her life that between her and Wayman and how they got together. And then we see different universes of how her life would have turned out if she didn't have Wayman and different things like that. And where the Christmas Carol aspect comes in is, I felt like this movie's trying to show you what her life would have been with or without, and the reason why it's so important that she says everything. Not quite like Christmas Carol, where it's like, well, what if you had died and the world doesn't exist without you? This is more, what if you didn't make the decisions that you made?
Yeah.
And it's told through interdimensional storytelling, through multiple unbelievably well done edits. When it comes to the Oscars, I don't know if Top Gun should win the award for editing or this, because they almost should tie, because they're both incredibly edited films.
Oh, yeah.
And through a series of events, Evelyn has to learn how to grasp with this dimension jumping. She gets better and better as the movie goes on. She learns how to fight. She learns how to kick ass. It turns out that her father is also evil in some dimensions, as he's trying to protect his own interest.
Yeah.
So it gets all kind of weird. Played by the fantastic James Wong, who's always a pleasure to see on screen.
91 years old.
91 years old, man. And he actually did at least one of his own stunts in this movie, even though they had stuntmen for him. I can't remember which one it was, but he did one. The movie is also made with 9 special effects artists that were all friends from the Daniels to save them money. They didn't go hire a crew. They did all on their home computers with stuff they learned, which is quite amazing. There's all kinds of crazy universes in this, from hot dog fingers to rocks to a painted universe.
Pinata universe.
Pinata, yeah. And I know a lot of people may have not seen this movie yet as we talk about it. And it's hard, really hard to describe what you're seeing without watching it. And then we implore you to watch this movie because it's absolutely wonderful. And we get to the end of the film when Evelyn has seemingly saved the universe. She stopped the giant great bagel that has everything on it that Jobu was trying to destroy the universe with. And gets really close to drawing Evelyn in. But Evelyn realizes, no, I can't, you know, do that. And she ends up stopping Jobu, and she returns to her, what she thinks is her reality. But Jobu is still up to no good, you know? Yeah. But instead of fighting, she fights it with love. You know, she realizes that, you know, she made some mistakes with her daughter, and she made some mistakes with Wayman. And she comes to forgive them and to forgive herself. And in what seems like a very long, dragged out ending, really isn't, because if you pay attention, it's the most important 10 minutes of the movie. As through dialogue and through discussion, we find out this movie is really a movie about family, about love, and about just not taking any day you have in the world for granted, and just and taking a look around you every day at the things you have and the things that appreciate you and that you appreciate. And that it doesn't matter if the laundromat is failing, or that, you know, if your daughter is chooses to be gay, or you know, somebody that walks in a laundromat with a big nose, they might be having a bad day too, you know. and it just teaches you that life is that important, to live it every day to the fullest. And that's kind of the message I got from the movie. And I know I'm talking, Matt, man, what some things you feel about this film and the things, the aspects of it.
And it's, there's a lot of this, you know, family and empathy stuff, like you said. You know, the mother, she pushes Joy so hard, and even Wayman, you know, alludes to that she creates that big bagel, which she pours everything into her, you know, all of her emotions that she feels from her mother just pushing her and pushing her in the direction that her mom wants, and her mom can't understand why, you know, why Joy is going the way she's going. Joy doesn't understand Evelyn, and it's not until they understand each other and everyone understands each other that they're able to become a family unit. And there's a lot of imagery in this whole film about being alone and then being together. In the beginning, when Evelyn's trying to do her taxes, there's one pair of eyeballs on one of the laundry bags, out off to the side, just one pair. And that's to symbolize that she's alone, as at the end, when they're all together having dinner and they've gotten past everything, they understand each other. They've been in each other's shoes and they've seen the universe through each other's eyes. There's 4 sets of eyeballs. And you know, whenever they do actually become a family unit, there's a lot of imagery of circular objects in there. There's a circular fan, circular ceiling light. Even at the beginning, when they're, you know, shown, you know, interacting at the party, they're shown through a circular mirror with a glass in the center. And, you know, that's to symbolize the bagel throughout. The right. bagel that is ultimately, you know, eating at this family.
Not only that, early on in the film, when Wayman and Evelyn and Joy and them are all talking, they never really look at each other. Wayman's either on the other side of the wall and Evelyn's not really paying attention. They're answering each other, but they're not communicating.
Yeah.
Towards the end of the film, they're all looking at each other, communicating.
That's a good point too. But yeah, and she, you know, it's revealed that Evelyn created Jobu, and it's because she created this monster because, you know, she wanted her to be the image that she saw her, you know, that she wanted to her to be portrayed to be. Mm-hmm. I guess that's the, you know, she wanted a certain outcome for her daughter, and she kept pushing for that outcome, and you know, just never being satisfied. It you know, just made her daughter feel like nothing mattered anymore. Right. Nothing mattered because she was ultimately still going to be, you know, unsuccessful in her mother's eyes, not good enough in her mother's eyes. And I'll always push to do something else, or pushed in that same direction again. And, you know, and Jobu is searching for the Evelyn that can possibly empathize with her and see that picture, you know, see the donut, which, you know, she plans to use to destroy the entire universe. I like how she, the fight scenes in this movie, how she can, you know, be everything everywhere all at once. And she can change certain things and she defeats, the security guards in like dance.
Right.
And she kills one of them with giant dildos and shit. And I forgot that happened. And I thought that was pretty hilarious. It's crazy. The film, it's so nuts. But there's a message, and I like how the film is able to balance all of it. And like you said, Mark, the editing's great. They filmed everything in a high rate of speed, so that they were able to edit as well as they did. And man, these directors are about my age. You know, one was born in 87, the other in 88. Yeah. And so it's like, man, you know, you've got some good future directors coming up, and it gives you, like you said, hope for the industry, new stuff, fresh ideas, and you know, the promise of theater that's not going to disappoint you going forward. Film was actually first intended to be, I guess, a Jackie Chan film.
Yeah, changed. They wanted to reunite Jackie Chan and Michelle Yeoh. And Michelle Yeoh initially turned it down too because she wasn't, you know, she's like, it just felt very typical to her. And then she asked for a few changes to be made to the script and things like that. And the Daniels agreed. And then she decided to do the film.
Yeah. And man, this film, I haven't been keeping up with the Oscars, but I hope it won a lot because it deserves Best Picture. It deserves a lot of awards. I know it can't win everything, but
no, go ahead.
It's yeah. Have you seen maybe how it's done?
This is what it's up against. Well, the Oscars are Sunday night.
Yeah, okay.
The episode will come on Monday. Top Gun Maverick was nominated for Best Picture, and Maverick's great, but it's a genre film. Genre films generally don't win. Women talking. I have no idea what that sounds like, but it's boring. It just sounds boring. This film, The Banshees of Irish Erin, which I've heard is actually really good. That stars Colin Farrell. Triangle of Sadness. No.
Yeah, no.
The Fablemans, which is Spielberg's movie, which I do want to see. All Quiet on the Western Front. Avatar, The Way of Water. Elvis, and a movie called Tar. But it does seem like right now that Everything Everywhere All at Once is a front runner going into Sunday night, as it's won a lot of awards already. It seems like it is a front runner. There's some belief that the popular of war films that a Quiet Western Front could pull the upset, but it doesn't seem likely. It feels like Everything Everywhere All at Once is the shoe-in for Best Picture, as a lot of predictions have made. And I, you know, the first time I watched it last year, I wasn't even thinking Oscars. You know, I wasn't really, I was just enjoying it for what it was, just a really clever science fiction comedy film.
Yeah.
And as I've watched it a few times since, I do see how good the performances are. Michelle Yeoh is fantastic. Key is fantastic. Their daughter plays Joy. I don't know the actress name. She's wonderful. She was also nominated for this film. And I can see why Michelle Yeoh is winning all the awards, because she's great, and why Key is winning the awards. And I hope they win. The Daniels have won several Best Director awards already for this, and they may win another one. They may win the big one. The film's nominated for 11 Oscars, and it seems to be a shoe-in for at least four or five, people are saying. It could win Best Original Screenplay also. Wow. A lot of people are saying Top Gun's most likely going to take the editing award from it, even though the editing is good in this. But I think Top Gun just has that edge in the editing because of the way they did that with real planes and shot 400 hours of footage, you know, in real airplanes, and then put it all together in post-production. You know, it's kind of hard to beat editing when you're putting Tom Cruise in a real F-14, whatever it is, and shooting it, you know.
Yeah, man.
Now, you know, so it seems to have that lead. Key is nominated for Best Supporting Actor for this film, not for Best Actor, which I thought was strange because he seems like he's a pretty major part in this movie.
He is.
But he was nominated for Best Supporting Actor. Because, you know, a lot of, it's funny, you know, everyone was saying Brendan Fraser for The Whale, shoo-in for best actor. But now Austin Butler's starting to gain some traction for Elvis because he's won a few awards, and they're saying he could pull the upset. And,
wow,
which would be, I think, huge, as much as it seemed like it was definitely Brendan Fraser's award. And it may still be, by the time you guys hear this episode, you will know. Michelle Yeoh, though, I think is going to be a shoo-in for winning best actress for this.
Yeah, definitely.
And, you know what? Maybe the Daniels. Oh yeah. Daniel Kwan and Daniel Sharn, they are director for best director. Yeah. So, you know, but I personally would be super excited if this movie wins best picture, because I think it deserves it. I really, as much as I like Top Gun Maverick, I do think that this movie is they're very deserving of best picture. It's a wonderful film. It really is. I've watched it about four times now since it came out, and I discover something new every time I watch it. It's definitely one of those kind of movies that you'll see more and more the more you watch it. Yeah. There's so much going on in this film that it's really hard to pick it all up in the first viewing. And I think that's why you discover more and more each time you watch it. Some of the circle things, I didn't even notice that. But the second or third time I watched it, I noticed the relationship. You don't feel like the relationship between Wayman and Evelyn is growing throughout this film, but then you realize it is, you know, through her,
they come to an understanding.
Her trust
realizes.
Even though she has a strained relationship with her husband, she still knows it's her husband, and she trusts him to follow these directions in this great, what a multiverse. What you fucking tell me to put on these earplugs and do this and that, but she trusts him throughout the film. And that's so huge in the relationship, that she has that trust, and she builds it and continues to trust him throughout the movie and to follow his lead in this crazy idea of what's going on. We didn't even talk about the rock scene, which is brilliant. They originally, in the script, it called for that to be voiceovered between Evelyn and Joy. And Michelle Yeoh was like, you know what? Why don't y'all subtitle it? It would be more subtle and have a bigger impact. And yeah, when the Daniels tested, they're like, they realize it worked. They're like, wow, you're right. And it's brilliant. The film within the film, when she, in one of her universes, she's an actress. I mean, that's,
yeah. And she's watching everything that we're watching play out. Yeah.
Yeah. It's incredible thought. I mean, the movie is just, on the surface, it's so complex, but yet also so simple. It really is a simple story about a family and the message that the movie delivers for families to always stick together no matter what. But it's also a very complex multiverse movie that does a better job with multiverse than any movie I've seen so far. You know,
I'd have to say that's probably true.
It's more Multiverse of Madness than Doctor Strange was. That's for sure.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. Definitely.
And,
But yeah. I will say, just like Multiverse of Madness, Strange loved Rachel McAdams' character in every universe. I feel like, you know, Michelle Evelyn and Waymond loved each other in every single universe.
Because even in the one where she's an actress, he checks in on her because he remembered her and everything. Yeah. And she may have not loved him like he did in that universe, but he had a love for her.
Yeah. Yeah. And then he was always concerned about her and always, you know, put, you know, her first, it seemed like, or at least her needs, you know, he always checked on her needs, and was always there for her, and he's going to continue to be there for her. And she realizes that at the end, whenever she kisses him, and I don't know how long, you know, it's been, and, right. They're able to make up, you know, so that's really cool. That part of the movie as well. Cause you have that theme going on, you know, her relationship with her husband. Yeah. And, you know, it's all because everyone was empathetic. You know, they listened, you know, put themselves in each other's shoes. And, that's always a good message.
And before we close out this movie, I just want to, again, just, man, it's such a pleasure to see Kehoe Quinn back on the screen after playing Short Round. And he's so good in this movie. The guy deserves a world, you know. It makes me somewhat a little disappointed that we're not getting a reunion on screen with him in Indiana. You know, I would love to have seen that. It almost happened in Kingdom of Crystal Skull in one of the script versions. And it's unfortunately not happening in Dial of Destiny. But seeing his comeback is so awesome. And Harrison Ford has been very supportive of his comeback and really enjoying it. And, a lot of Hollywood is, you know, some great stories out there about how he was I wasn't sure if I should talk to Tom Cruise, but then Tom started talking to me and, you know, and I got to meet Tom Cruise and he's just really enjoying this comeback that he's had. And it's a lot of fun to watch, and but I can't recommend this movie enough. You know, it's so good. You know, if you get a chance to see Everything Everywhere All at Once, do so. It's fixing to become a lot more popular, I think, after this weekend when it hopefully wins a bunch of Oscars. Yeah,
I think the more it's being mentioned, the more people and the more second wave promotion it's getting now.
Yeah.
You know, being featured on Showtime. If you're
still theaters showing it in some areas. Really? Yeah.
I didn't know
because of the Oscars and stuff. Yeah.
Well, I know Vudu has it like front and center as one of their, you know, one of their deals. So.
I mean, I bought this Blu-ray when it came out. I was like, I'm buying this. I wanted to own it. And, nice. Don't buy a whole lot of Blu-rays anymore, but this one I had to own because it's just such a good movie.
Every once in a while, something comes along. Yeah. Got to have it on Blu-ray.
Yeah, and I think just listening to you, I think you definitely appreciate it more than you did when you first saw it.
Oh,
because it's a lot to take in when you first saw it, and I was really shocked when we did our end of the years and you didn't have it in your top five. I'm like, I think if you went back now, you might have this in your top five because I think
definitely.
Hearing your voice, I think you appreciate it more than when you first saw it.
At first, I was just like, man, what? Because there's a lot to unpack if you're just kind of like. Trying to take it all in at once. I think it's definitely one of those films you understand more, you know, the second, third, fourth time watching it. Cause I had to watch this film. I'm not going to lie. You know, it would have only been my second time watching it, but I watched it a third and a fourth time, because I was trying to get it.
Yeah. Has the wife watched it with you?
Yes. Mm. She watched it that first time, but she hasn't rewatched it.
No, it's definitely a good one. Definitely a movie I will talk about for years and recommend to people if they haven't seen it. Just one of those movies. Just a good, good film. I mean, 2022 was between this and Batman and Top Gun and Avatar. And I mean, there were some really great films. Bullet Train, which I enjoyed a lot. Bullet some really Train, good films that came out last year. So it looks like cinema is on its way back. And hopefully we have a good year this year with movies. And one of those movies... It's coming out with its fourth installment in a couple of weeks, which leads us into our preview of our next couple of weeks of films. About a couple of years ago, we covered the first John Wick film, And we thought with part four coming out on the 24th of March, what is a better time than now to finish your trilogy? So over the next 2 weeks, we're going to cover John Wick part two and part three, but we're going to start next week with John Wick chapter two.
Welcome to Rome. Is this a formal event or a social affair?
Social.
How many buttons?
Two.
And what style?
Tactical.
Mr. Wick, do enjoy your party.
How good to see you again so soon.
You have no idea what's coming.
You want a war? Or do you want to just give me a gun?
Whoever comes, I'll kill them all.
The man, the myth, the legend.
John Wick. You're not very good at retiring.
I'm working on it.
Yes, sir.
Probably my favorite installment so far, to be honest.
Oh, definitely.
I do enjoy one, and I enjoy three, but two, I think, is my favorite installment in the series so far. Just the way it opens up the world of the assassins and the Continental and everything else, and gives us some fantastic action scenes. I looking forward to discussing it next week and talking about it again. I watched this pretty recently as I let my oldest son watch all three John Wick movies so he'd be ready for John Wick 4. So it's pretty fresh in my memory, and looking forward to spend some time with Mr. Wick over the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, I like how this film just starts off like with the pedal down. Yeah. You know, so it's going to be fun watching it again and talking about it.
Yep.
And that character actor that is at the beginning, and he's talking about legend of the pencil. I'm gonna
he
definitely
killed
have
him with
fun
a
watch.
Fucking pencil.
A pencil. Oh man.
And some cool moments that we get Common is introduced in this movie in his part.
Oh yeah.
Ruby Rose playing a cool character. So some good stuff in this movie. So
oh definitely.
It'll be fun to talk about next week, John Wick chapter two. But until then, the RebelRadioPodcast.com, as we mentioned earlier, for all your Rebel Radio needs. And we thank you as listening for always, and we'll check back in next week too to see if we were correct about some of our Oscar predictions and what we thought was going to win. And hopefully we're talking about Everything Everywhere All at Once, winning some big awards next week when we do talk the news. But until then, as always, this has been Mark.
This has been Matt.
Remember, as always, which just I just said, there. Just go there and do it.
And do it.